on DeMille.
Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
We're back with you with the positive mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And specifically today, we're talking about human sexuality. Yes, once again, we're going into the evolution of human sexuality, a very fascinating thing. The evolution of man, which was determined basically by human sexuality. We have presented seven previous, this is our eighth, in a series about human sexuality that have been very well received. Back 144,000 years ago, women took control of reproductive behavior, because if they had not, our society would not have survived. Humans would not have survived. There was a problem, and that had to be solved somehow. The solution was women saying, we have to take control.
So when that happened, females caused a major shift in human evolution, because up until that point, well, I guess pretty much natural selection had been the primary dynamic behind how humans evolved, and natural selection is basically survival of the fittest. But from the time women figured out that there was a relationship between mating and having babies, and decided to control whom and when and where and how they would mate, then from that moment on, human evolution was determined by sexual selection, meaning that now the traits selected for with a criterion not used up until this point.
Let's go over that, you know, because there are many theories which explain how creatures evolve.
Sure.
The first is the natural selection. In natural selection, members of a species produce more progeny than they could survive.
Yes, so therefore, when that happens, of course, only the strongest survive long enough to procreate. And that's a selection that leads to a stronger and stronger gene pool, so that the individual that survive and that have offsprings are the strongest, are the ones that have figured out, not just mentally, mind you, this is not an intellectual thing, this is a basic physiological thing. When your immune system, when your digestive system, when your body is able to survive the challenges of your environment, you somehow incorporate that knowledge in your genes, and then you communicate that knowledge to your offsprings through genetic inheritance. That's natural selection.
Now, so therefore, that'll mean that maybe you would put out a bunch of different DNA messages based on your own past. Some of them will work and some of them won't. The ones that survive carry one gene set.
And that's the strongest, meaning it's the survival of the one that is the most capable of surviving in the environment it lives in.
So Darwin's idea of natural selection was one theory. Then the second selective process is called sexual selection. Darwin, in The Descent of Man, he detailed the powerful effects of sexual selection on animal and human evolution, which is what we've been talking about for the last 8 weeks.
And sexual selection is not just humans who select sexually. Peacocks is a great example, Armand, right, of sexual selection.
Yeah, it showed how the choice of a female in a species can propel the changes. I mean, the peacock is such a good example.
Yeah, because in the peacock, the females obviously liked the long feathers and the beautiful colors on them, and so the females kept selecting the males that would display wider and more colorful and more impressive and more enormous plumage, to the point where now we have a male of this species that walks around with such a tail that it encumbers his movements and actually has become a detriment to its survival, because the male of the peacock has such an enormous amount of feathers in the tail that it has a difficult time moving around with it. And yet, since it was selected so much by the females, that's what has happened. So that's a good example of sexual selection.
So, for example, why would you buy a Cadillac Eldorado with fancy fins and a convertible? Because if you have that, somebody's going to notice you. Well, then why not buy an SUV? Well, then I get a bigger thing for people to be attracted to with fins. Well, then why not make it a step beyond that and you buy a mobile home and you carry it around with you because you figure this is a good way to pick up girls? Eventually, that which you're using to attract becomes
a permanent fixture of your physiology.
And impairs your movement.
It can.
Now, this is interesting because today what we are going to talk about, this is going to lead us today to a very interesting story. Today, Roberta and I are talking about the revenge of the right brain. Yes, we
yes, we are.
It really is. And we put titles to every one of these programs, and we get excited. Last week, we were talking about attraction and
being in love and falling in love and what attracts us.
So we put the title of yesterday's show, last week's show, is Falling in Love and Attraction, and one time we did the female orgasm. We have these series, but this is the most exciting title.
Yes.
The Revenge of the Right Brain.
And it is actually what is happening.
Well, we're going to get there.
And we're going to get there. But I'm so excited, Armand, because I so much empathize with this title.
Yes, of course.
I feel like I'm part of that momentum in evolution.
I think it kind of explains exactly where our people are now, where the planet is, with everything that's going on. This is so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's get to it. We talked about sexual selection. And we talked about occasionally males sexually select females to kind of cooperate, but the vast majority of examples of selection, of sexual selection in nature, follow the dynamic of the females picking the males. Now, this is very important.
Yeah.
Men develop according to what females are going to pick. So if anything is responsible for the invasion of Iraq, no, everybody's...
Well,
you know, in a funny kind of thing.
Of course.
It started off with sexual selection.
It did.
And we're going to see that this is part of the revenge of the right brain.
In humans, Armand, I wanted to say that both male and female can select in this way sexually. But the predominance, at least for the beginning of human evolution, has been females selecting males.
With humans, both females and males do the choosing. What you're saying, sexual selection as a selective process kind of branches off from
natural selection.
Natural selection,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now there's a third kind of selection. And this is panogenesis, right? Which is the origin of bread. No,
the origin of bread?
Because of pan, you know what I mean?
Right.
No, it's the origin of everything. The dynamics of panogenesis was described by Darwin.
It's also known, for those of you who are anthropologists, this is also known as the Lamarckian selection.
Mm-hmm. Two main tenets of panogenesis are that individuals are shaped by their environment either directly by its effects or indirectly by the use and disuse of limbs and organs. Want to describe that, Roberta?
Well, yes. For instance, if I am suddenly in the midst of an ice age whereby I'm used to a certain climate, but suddenly the temperature becomes much colder, I may develop, even in a short amount of time, one or two generations, the capacity to thicken my skin, for instance, because I'm adapting to the environment. So the capacity to adapt to changes in the environment, to demands that were not foreseen, to anything that affects me that I'm not prepared for genetically, anything that compels my physiology to change, and then that becomes a permanent asset of my genetic inheritance, that's a Lamarckian evolutionary dynamic.
So let's say that it is the Ice Age, and suddenly you realize that fingers and toes tend to get frostbite. Well, you lose your fingers and toes.
Right.
You don't need them anymore. You know, you could, and so you pass on through the genes, smaller fingers, smaller toes, smaller fingers, smaller toes, till you're toeless and fingerless.
So this is important because we said one is natural selection, survival of the fittest. One is sexual selection. So the genes that survive are those that are selected for by individuals of the species. And then this is an environmental kind of selection whereby those who survive are those who can adapt to the changes in their environment.
So, for example, an actual exposure of an animal to cold and dark, its whole life may engender a next generation with longer hair.
Yes, that's what I was saying, that if there is a sudden change in the environment I live in, if I'm capable of adapting to that, I am also very likely to pass on, to incorporate that information on how to survive into my basic physiology and to pass that information along to my descendants.
This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Atti. We're talking about human evolution, sexuality, human sexuality. You know, Roberta, what this brings me so much to the refugee syndrome, and I know we're not going to go into it in detail.
Oh, no,
but
absolutely.
Those of you who heard us do this work about the refugee syndrome.
Yes.
Panagenesis at its best.
Yes.
How do you survive when suddenly you believe that you are alone and abandoned?
Right.
In the world, what are you going to do with yourself? And you might just cut off your fingers and toes, you know,
and some
just
people
to get
do.
By, and some people do.
But now, these three dynamics that we just described are actually common throughout the world of animals and vegetables. But now we're going to come to one particular selection that is only human, and that's cultural selection.
Cultural selection, learning. On an abstract level, now that's another, it's a product of the female sexual selection.
It's an offshoot of sexual selection.
It lays two levels down from natural selection. But, you know, it's kind of amazing. This is where cultural selection, which only affects humans, creates an actual development of the species.
Well, what we're saying here is that, you know, we did say that about 144,000 years ago, females took control of the reproductive activity. And so they started determining when and where and with whom they would mate. But then they also started to choose their mates based on, well, how sociable the man might be, or how creative, or how funny, or how affectionate, or, you know, the kind of thing that is predominantly, or there's only human, and that may be attractive aside from the brute strength, aside from the capacity to hunt, aside from all of that.
Because originally, maybe the guy's brute strength and his ability to hunt was the only thing that was necessary. But remember, this is a time, 140,000 years ago, where women were dying because of a change of inhuman evolution, where the heads were getting bigger on humans. They couldn't pass through the smaller pelvis of very young or underdeveloped women. So women came up with this idea, I have to control this thing. If humans are going to survive, we have to control men having sex with us when we're not ready for it. So the idea was putting in these controls. Now these controls go a little further. You don't only want to control for who you're going to let have you sexually, but now you're forward thinking, a brand new thing. Forward thinking is, who might be more able to get me food in the future, provide me provide me shelter in the future? So maybe what I'll do is I'll see if this person's got a bigger brain, if this person's more intelligent. What makes you think somebody has got a little different than just brute strength? Well, you go into a cave, and here's this guy saying, come on up, I want you to see my etchings.
And cave etchings?
His cave etchings, absolutely. And you walk in and you see these pictures of horses and oxen and brontosauri on the wall, and you look at it and you say, hey, this is nice. I think I'll lay down over here.
I like your etchings.
I like your etchings,
mm-hmm.
mister.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the etchings, what do they
see,
do?
That's a cultural statement. I like your etchings. A peacock is not able to make that assessment. And therein lies the difference between
look at the size of the peacock.
Animals and Armand. Animals, I guess they do. Animals and humans have that difference, which is the ability to selectively focus on something that allows the mind to expand beyond the limits of the present. Now, an animal is kind of stuck in the present, but if I'm in a cave with a possible mate, someone I am assessing as a possible mate, and I'm in a cave and I'm a primitive female, well, yes, it matters that he's able to hunt, but if I'm in a cave that is also covered with beautiful etchings and paintings, and my mind is stimulated into a kind of imaginary journey, into a kind of excitement and visual stimulation and imaginary, maybe there's a painting of stars and moons, maybe there's an abstract flight of my imagination that makes my experience with this mate much more interesting than simply mating to have babies.
Come up to see my etchings is the oldest line in the books.
I guess it must be.
It was in the cave. But you know, if you think about it, friends, imagine if you're a single person and you get in a taxi cab and the driver is listening to you, one of two possible stations. He's either listening to Howard Stern or WBAI.
Right.
Right? And one of those two are going to turn you on. You're going to say to yourself, oh, he's listening to WBAI. Maybe this guy does some thinking. And suddenly you're going to pay attention to the person where you may not have paid attention before. And now what's really important, rippling muscles do not determine everything anymore.
Right.
Now, cave drawings? How about this? How about the ability to play music? Early on, they learned to beat drums, to make
and
sounds,
dance.
And dance.
Yeah.
So now you're looking at it, and like Ringo Starr says, the drummer always scores.
I didn't know that Ringo Starr said that.
I'm making it up.
Okay.
I think Einstein may have said it. Okay.
All right.
But the idea being that now you're looking at somebody who moves you in a different kind of way. He has musical rhythms. He has artistic appreciation. Well, this is fascinating, because now the sexual selection is giving way to what's called a cultural selection.
Exactly, which is only in humans, because only humans have the capacity to leap with their minds beyond the boundaries of the present. Therefore, they have the capacity to abstract and to experience ecstasy at the sight of a dancer, or ecstasy at the sight of art. Now, this is a human capacity that females selected for in mates, so that the sexual selection also became a cultural selection, meaning that females began to choose consistently to mate with those males who had a propensity for artistic, creative expression, more so than with males who were just good hunters.
So the weightlifter, you know, gave way somewhat. The strong, the mighty, the powerful, the alpha male didn't always win. In fact, one of the things that were very interesting about studying of alpha males, which we've also done a little, which we'll be presenting to you, is that you may have called him the alpha male, but throughout all of evolution, you see with every animal that the female is usually sneaking off to have a relationship with somebody else, even though the alpha male is the one who's in charge.
Mm.
You know?
Right.
So therefore, the females are selecting now. And now, of course, we're talking about female-male, this standard heterosexual kind of reference. You could do whatever you want in your mind about it, but when it comes to selection and offspring so far, but although we're changing this now, birth and the passing on of the genes only happened through the heterosexual model. That's beginning to change. You see,
well,
it's beginning to change because now two women can have a baby.
Right. Well, now about that, when human evolution reached that stage, from what I've read, actually human societies were rather promiscuous in the sense that, not in a negative sense, but in the sense that sexuality was something that happened much more freely than what we have today in a way, or at least overtly. And also bisexuality was much more the norm, or much more accepted than what it is today. So actually, maybe what today we would call homosexuality is not even what we mean if we were those ancient people. Did I make sense when I
you
said
did,
that?
But you may have been politically incorrect.
Okay.
We're just going to have to give you our solution.
Okay, thank you.
All right, now look, seriously, this whole idea of one point when you do things without thinking. At one point, you just brute force ruled, and you don't have to think at all. And so you select the guy with the biggest club. You know what I mean? You pick the guy who's going to get you the most meat, guy who's going to bring the stuff back. Then you start thinking. Then the female starts thinking, or women, I don't know why we're calling them females anymore, because it is humans and it is women. Women start thinking, guys with better brains can provide better for me.
They're more fun. What's wrong with that? They're more enjoyable. I would rather be with a guy who is able to dance and to drum and sing. I'm having more fun than to be with a guy who just grunts as he walks in with the leg of the mammoth. I mean, it's just basic creative expression that may have been attractive. And it must have been attractive because that's what females selected for.
But I think, I think it was more than fun. I think the real beauty of it was forward thinking, that he might invent the Apple computer.
Uh-huh.
Whereas I don't think the other guy's going to invent the Apple computer.
Right.
So I think the one who's going to provide for me and my offspring is going to be this other type with the cave drawings and the drumming and
right.
the, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And the penthouse apartment, you know, that kind of
right.
penthouse cave.
But then something happened again, which is very interesting.
And here it goes, my friend.
This is something very, very interesting that happened. And I would say, between 40 and 50,000 years ago, something like that. So speech, human speech, verbal ability, is only human, of course, yes. Some animals, primates and marine mammals are able to learn sign language or something, you know, expressive in terms of a very rudimentary alphabet. But basically the capacity to speak so far has only been found in humans. And we take it for granted because we all speak today. But imagine what it took, evolutionary speaking, for us to be able to now describe our experience in words. Well, in order to do that, something had to happen in the brain that centered the speech in a place of the brain in the left hemisphere and made speech more and more accurate as the brain developed finer and finer connections to that, to the organ of speech. And so from song, because singing, the rhythmic vocalization of singing was already happening, but song became speech through and thanks to a very major shift in brain function. This, apparently, obviously, was also selected for by females, by human females. It must have been wonderful to be with a guy who could not only speak, not only sing, but could also speak, because speech also allows a flight of the imagination even further than art, up to a point. When I describe something in words, I am creating an image that is completely abstract, and it requires a tremendous leap of the mind to be able to follow it, to create it and follow it. So women must have selected the males who were better able to communicate through verbal speech.
This is again, you know, we're now moving into a new era. 40 or 50,000 years ago, speech develops. Speech, a funny thing. We take it for granted. Words. You know, I mean, you could have all the peacock feathers you want.
Do you know that, Armand, in order to speak, we risk a tremendous amount of, there's a tremendous amount of risk in speaking, because in order to speak, we have had to change our larynx and pharynx in such a way that when we swallow, we have to momentarily interrupt breathing. And that's why it's so common for humans to choke. And it's not so for other animals who don't speak. So we really we must have valued it very much.
You know, it had to be of great value, but what it did was the following now. Now, come up and see my, let me show you what kind of animal I could bring home to you. Now bringing home the leg of the mastodon, which used to have appeal, doesn't have as much appeal. And now, come up and see my etchings. That's kind of cute. Watch me drum away. Well, that's kind of nice. But now I'm going to read you some poetry.
Mm.
Ooh. And I'm going to tell you a story about what happened to my cousin.
Right.
Now, these abilities to pass on information, communication, suddenly became most highly desirable. And those who could talk were suddenly selected, again, cultural selection. They were chosen as all, but not only those who could talk, but who could talk best? Now, there is a lot of history for this, because, you know, robins sing. And if the better singer scores more often. And so birds who warble, you know, the better you warble, the better it is. Well, speech now became one of those things that the better you did it, the more ability you had to choose your mate and be chosen by a mate. But then this thing happens. You have to use a huge amount of your brain to learn speech. Not only do you have to use a large amount of your brain, but your brain is going to grow gigantically in capacity on the left-hand side. Where are you going to take all this space from? This is what starts the revenge of the right brain. And this is what we're going to be talking about with you in a little bit. We used to just be guys who were relaxing and taking it easy, but now, no more. You got to learn how to draw, you got to learn how to play instruments, you got to learn all of that. We're going to come back with you in just a couple of minutes. I'll play you a little music. that reflects the fatigue of the human male, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Hi, this is Iggy Pop, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth.
Okay, Armand, start bringing up your music now.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Crisco Bay, 'cause I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Look like nothing's gonna change, everything still remains the same. Can't do what 10 people tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Yes. Sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone. It's 2,000 miles I roam just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of a bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, sitting on a dock of the bay, wasting time.
Otis Redding, sitting on the side of the bay. You used to hear that when you were a kid, huh, Roberta?
Yes, I did.
Where did
I loved it.
In Italy, you didn't even know what the words meant.
Well, of course not.
So what did you think the words were? Sitting on how?
I actually thought it was a love song of someone who had lost a lover.
And so when you sang the words, what words would you sing? Sitting on, just tell me the name of the song.
Sitting on the dock of the bay.
So you actually heard those words, dock of the bay?
No, not when I was back in Italy. I know it now because I know English. God knows what I thought back then. It was just a sound. But it's very interesting, Armand, how my brain really learned to speak English way before I knew what it meant. Because growing up, I liked the sound of English so much. Just the sound of the language, that I used to tune into English-speaking stations up in England with my little radio in Italy. And I used to listen to them all night under the pillow. I used to put the radio under my pillow, and I used to listen. And all night I would hear this voice speaking in English. Well, I think that I registered all of it way before I knew what the meaning of the words were, which actually really leads into what we're going to talk about next, because the brain has tremendous capacities other than speech that we want to now discuss.
Yeah, I mean, well you gotta think about, you know, are there costs to some of what we do? One of the costs to what we do is, hey, you develop a bigger brain, and 140,000 years ago, yeah, that's really good. You got a bigger brain, but now you can't be born because the pelvis is too small. That means for a period of time, there are a bunch of mothers are going to die with babies in their wombs that are unborn. there's a consequence. Now the brain's getting even bigger. And not only is it getting any bigger, but it's reaching capacity. And so what do you think a brain weighs? Give me a...
Of what?
How much do you think a brain weighs? 5 pounds?
Not even.
Not even, like 3 pounds
maybe
of brain?
Maybe 3.5, 4 pounds, yeah.
You got 3.5 or 4 pounds of brain, and it's split into two hemispheres.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle is a corpus callosum, right?
Right.
Now, I used to think it was a Corpus Christi. The corpus, mm-hmm. That's because I was going to Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
The corpus callosum, we have a left hemisphere and a right hemisphere today. Now, we're going to bring you the revenge of the right hemisphere, because the left hemisphere starts developing, and just to develop speech, you need to put a lot of weight on that left hemisphere. You got to cut an awful lot of neurons. You got to go into a lot of convolutions. Now, the right side is more about physical properties, you know, sight, touch, building strength, muscles, all on the right side. A right kind of guy is going to be very sensual, very touching, very feely.
But the right side is the brain that perceives itself connected to everything else in the moment. So it's the brain that is open perceptually. It's open, but not focused. It's the brain that is able to integrate information from the environment without having to analyze it, to process it, and to bring it to the conscious level of awareness.
A simpler brain.
Not simpler. It's different. It's not the brain that we normally use.
But it's a brain much more like the other animals in the planet.
Yes, it's a brain that we share much more so with everybody. Yes, with everybody
primates.
Else. Yes, true. But in humans, mind you, Armand, it's still much more developed than in any other creature. But yes, it's the kind of brain that is, the word for it is imminent, meaning it's just here now, and it needs to be stimulated by the here and now. Now here comes the problem. The brain, the right side of the brain, in order to be able to thrive, to grow and thrive in the human, needs stimuli that come from the moment, not from abstraction. Remember that speech developed as a form of elaborated abstraction, meaning removal of the mind from the present. While at first that was very exciting, because my God, Armand, what an amazing capacity humans are able to abstract, are able to create a reality in their minds that is not really there. What a flight of the imagination. What an amazing, stupendous thing to do, and how exciting. However, when it becomes lopsided, when it becomes all that the person is locked into, what we miss out is this other reality.
Armand DeMille here with you with Roberta Atti. We've been talking, in case you just tuned in, to Otis Redding. We're a radio program here on WBAI. We are a station. WBAI, in the middle of your dial, is listener-supported. It is a fabulous station. Been with you a number of years, supported by the listeners, and gives us the freedom to explore things that we're not normally inhibited by our sponsors and people. And we've been talking about human sexuality for a number of weeks. The Human Sexuality series, which we've presented on Wednesdays, is talked about human evolution and human sexuality, and it's been fascinating. It's been fabulous. It seems endless. We love doing the research. Roberta Maria Atti, my associate who does this with me as a co-host. We've been doing great things with this. And today's program, in case you missed it, you could pick up a copy of it by calling 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. Now, Roberta, let's go to...
Yes, I can't wait.
The weight of the left side of the brain. You got to get this, friends. The left side of your brain is getting fatter and heavier and bigger.
Yes, and it's getting more and more domineering and powerful. And it overrides the perceptions and the functioning of the right side, which has been the predominant side up until this point. So
think about your puppy. Dog. You got a dog. You go to your dog. You want to pet your dog. You want to give him some food. He's a here and now kind of guy. Your dog.
And we can be that way also, but we've forgotten how.
And it's amazing that we spend so much time in spiritual development nowadays trying to go back to living in the here and now.
That's part of the revenge.
That's part of the revenge.
That's right.
To give away the punchline.
Well, that's okay.
Let's go back to what's happening. What is the difference in weight between the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain?
Okay, well, I don't know the weight, but now what happens is we are at a point where females are enchanted by the poetry, and so they start selecting for males that have better and better verbal skills. And this forces the male to develop a brain that is more and more capable of putting things in a sequence in time, like words are. When we speak, we put little bits of information in sequence within a certain amount of time. When the mind can do that through speech, the mind also becomes able to do that within a frame of an amount of time in anything. So here comes the capacity to plan something and to organize something and to analyze things and the capacity to cause and effect, to make a connection between a cause and effect. You need this capacity to abstract, to see the connection between past and present and future.
Cause and effect
is an important left hemisphere activity, but see, when you live in the right side of the brain, or when you come from experience from that side, the cause and effect is perceived together, not separate in time. So the perception happens all at once. In speech, there's a beginning and an end.
All right. Listen, we're talking about the way the speech is created. And I know this is a lot of information, friends. Think left hemisphere of the brain, right hemisphere of the brain. Right hemisphere of the brain lives in the now. It's the puppy. Show him the leash. He's going to go out. You give him a little food. He's going to eat the food. We are like that. There's a part of us that lives very much in the present and has throughout the years. And many humans today have right hemisphere dominance. They are people who are simpler folks. They might be tribes people.
Well, there's a minority of humans who now are, but it's increasing. The numbers of these folks is increasing, who are now returning to
we're gonna get that
is more primitive. But
wait,
Armand,
before that,
there's the selection.
Before that, what we're saying is that there are a number of people, we all have this capacity on the right side, mainly right side. The left side comes along with speech. Speech has built into it the very ability to make a sentence means you got to consider past, present, and future. That's the incredible part about language. So now we become future thinkers. Now there's another group of us who are not doing this, who are more right brain dominant. And the more right brain dominant, the ones who are still out there in the world, maybe folks who are not so much in touch with science, not so much in touch with development, they don't listen to radios maybe, they don't have that much speech, in fact they may talk very little among themselves, and some tribes people are like that. We, with the left side development, are developing the ability to figure things in the future. We develop weapons, we develop things that could be used. We decide to invade a country of people who are mostly, who don't have the kind of left hemispheric development as we do, and it's an easy pushover. You just kind of walk in and, you know, it's simple. They may be fighting back really hard, but it's relatively simple because of our the left hemispheric development. So what happens? What happens? Does this, is it just going to be allowed to happen like this? Is the left side of the brain just going to keep developing and keep developing? Now, Roberto, let's get to the revenge. And thank you for bearing with me while I try to explain this.
It's just that I have some really important things to say, Armand, that I'm having.
Let's go.
I need for you to give me the time to flow with it, because it's an important concept that I have to put together, and it refers to the fact that in order for this capacity to be developed, what had to happen in the brain of human beings is that females selected for males who were better able to verbalize, because let me start over. What I'm trying to say here is that in order for males to become more like what females were selecting for, testosterone had to be increased, because that is what facilitated the brain development in that particular way. Now, since testosterone is the hormone that also is responsible for certain kinds of behavior and a certain kind of thinking and a certain kind of experiencing, testosterone, the effects of it also manifested in ways that led to the kind of society we have today, where we have a patriarchal system, and for almost 10,000 years now, what we have had is selection of the mate has shifted from being predominantly the female selecting the male, because of this shift in power and males becoming more dominant and aggressive. Now it was the males who became the choosers, and they determined who would mate with whom and when, and that selected for stronger and stronger and more aggressive males, and that led to the society that Armand was describing, whereby we are at the epitome of aggression and violence. And this is the other side of testosterone. This is the destructive side of what we have selected for. So the power to choose a mate up until a certain point in time was belonged to the women, and they selected males who were better and better verbalizer. But in order to verbalize, they had to increase their level of testosterone, and in order to do that, they also developed the kind of aggression and the kind of social structure, hierarchical, competitive, that we have today. Now, what...
Okay, now that's quite a mouthful. So there we have this problem, you see? We have these very aggressive, left-side, left-brain dominant, male-selecting society. And what's going to happen? You see, I think, and Roberta thinks, that the human, we only have a few minutes, that the human species would probably implode if it went this way. If you got so left side dominant, eventually what's probably going to happen is nuclear war, is some way of destroying yourself. And I believe that the master of whoever determines what's going to be best for genetic survival is going to kick back. And I think we're seeing the revenge of the right brain in many forms. And this is what I want to go to, Roberta, because we just don't have the time to go all the way through this. We have other programs where we could do it. Let's talk about some of the revenges of the right brain. Some of the things that have manifested to say in the right brain is saying, hey, you got to be more present. You got to be here. You can't be speech dominant. What are some of the signs?
Well, what has happened in the past 100 years or so, maybe a couple hundred years, is that actually females in the modern world, in the post technological society and the information society, women have regained control over whom they mate with and when. And so because the choice has gone back now to the females, the traits that are being selected are back to the traits that were selected before this whole thing came about. So the children we have today, a good 20% of them, and these are the children we often describe as learning disabled, children with ADHD, children who stutter, children with autism, children with all kinds of what we call neurological impairment, are actually the children who are now coming out of a selection that has gone back to the female and that selects mates who produce then individuals that have a brain which is left, which is not left hemisphere dominant, but it which is more balanced and where the right hemisphere is more active, and therefore we have a generation of kids who need for us to respond to their particular need to grow by being stimulated in the here and now and not so much in the abstract like we expect them to be able to do. We expect them to learn in an abstract way that causes them to lose focus, to not be able to pay attention, to not be able to express themselves the way we want them to. But if we could allow the children with this kind of brain to learn from a more imminent experience, the touch, the sound, the music, the dancing, the being connected to the wholeness of the experience as opposed to focusing on reading a bunch of words in a book, the kids would learn in their own way and develop the brain in the way that works for them, and we would have much less pathology, drugging, etc. of the children. We would be able to have, and by the way, these kids are also the geniuses, the musicians, the artists, the children that manifest this kind of right hemisphere dominance are also the kids that are bringing back to society a much more creative expression as opposed to those who are just focused in this left brain, analytical approach to learning.
So there you have it, friends. The revenge of the right brain is that it is throwing you people, and it is saying, no, with all of this development, we're going to throw at you people which our society have been saying, give them Prozac because they don't fit the mold. Autism, learning disabilities, people who say of the ADHD or the attention deficit disorder, which is some kind of a myth, which is people looking at it and saying, well, we've got to get you to go into that left brain mold, so we'll medicate you and electrocute you and do these things to you. Meanwhile, Roberta, at one point, you had...
I was autistic as a child, and of course I stuttered so much that you couldn't understand what I was saying because I was forced to fit into that educational mold, and then of course I had to give that up and I had to learn my own way. And since I was fortunate enough to be able to allow myself to do that, I was able to learn. And this is what can happen to children that now we label as learning disabled, is that if we give them the stimuli that they require, they can grow and thrive and they can be a wonderful change for society towards a more expressive and artistic and creative and peaceful society. But if we continue to thwart their growth and development by pathologizing them, what we have is a bunch of people who end up doing alcohol, drugs, or who seek deviant forms of entertainment or activity simply because we cut their development by forcing them to learn differently than what they would need to. So this is the hope that I share with Armand, is that this information will help the parents of these kids understand that perhaps there's nothing wrong with that child, that perhaps this child needs to be held more, touched more, sung to, danced with, and allowed to experience nature more? Why do autistic studies with animals, why are they so successful? Because the animal shares the capacity to be in the now with the child, something that us adult humans have lost.
This is Armand DeMille. We're running out of time, unfortunately. My friends, Roberto, I want to thank you so much for that succinct presentation. It is so difficult because there is so much more we would like to say, but your message is so heartfelt, you know? You know, maybe what these children are teaching us is that we've got to get back to that right side simplicity, you know, and that we've got to kind of join them instead of trying to get them to join us. In trying to shape these children, have these children come back to us and be like us, maybe we have to be more like them and enter their world, and this is the gift we're being given. It is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. If you want to be in touch with Roberta, you can try Roberta for Health. It's Roberta 4 with the number 4 in the middle, health, at AOL.com, right, Roberta?
Yes.
And if you want a copy of this and the previous few, the previous 7 programs that have all been amazing, Roberta, all, you would call 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. So, my friends, I want to thank you very much. Michael, thank you for the extra time. He's a little Claire de Lune, my Nadia Salerno Sonnenberg. And we'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 o'clock. By the way, our phones have been out of order. If you call and it's busy, just call back a little later. Thanks. Bye-bye.